Moncrief on News Talk.
There's always a difficulty in the investigation of cases of rape and sexual assault, and it's often the word of one person against another with no witnesses. And this is particularly so when it comes to historical sex abuse. Reporting that crime takes extreme bravery and the knowledge that it might, after a long, tortuous process, result in no prosecution. That was the experience of our first guest, who's been writing about it in today's Irish Times, and she does join us now. We will be calling her Mary, though obviously that's not her real name, and we have altered her voice, and obviously we will be touching on some subjects that will be upsetting for some listeners. Mary, good afternoon.
Hi, Sean.
Now, the abuse took place between the ages of 6 and 10, and as I understand it, there was some years where you just didn't tell anyone.
Well, I didn't really realise it myself until I was about 17 and I was out with a friend and she confided in me that she had been abused. And I remember being shocked and listening to her, and it was only in the course of the conversation that I realised, whoa, I can relate to some of what she's saying.
Yeah, and so about a year later then, did you tell someone about it?
Yes, so I went to college in Limerick and I was having trouble with relationships, and I walked into the Limerick Rape and Sexual Abuse Centre, and that was my first time.
And how were they?
They were brilliant. Yeah, honestly, in every step of the way, outside the legal system, anyone that I have sought out for support has been brilliant.
Yeah, and but at that point, did it occur to you or that maybe you might report this?
No, absolutely not. And I was very adamant that I didn't want to do that. I just wanted to find support in getting on with my life.
Yeah, and did you find that worked?
I suppose that I tried my best to, you know, I absolutely into this day do not want it to define me, but it, you know, things can trigger, situations just can leave me very upset and have a panic attack. And, you know, I have the coping mechanisms to deal with those panic attacks, but they come out of nowhere.
Yeah. And so what age were you when you told anyone in your family?
So as part of my college course in Limerick, I spent a year abroad and in America, and they had, I don't know if you're familiar with, they have these events in the 90s, which were called Take Back the Night, which were, you know, a rally where survivors were invited to speak in public in a really safe space. And I sat there listening to loads of people speak, and I somehow just jumped up and shared my story. And after that, I got back to my dorm and I contacted my sister, and she was amazing. She told me to write down everything.
Okay, and did that take you some time? And that must have been, again, triggering to write everything down.
Yeah, and I still had that piece of paper all these years later and gave it to the guards.
So then in the kind of intervening years, I assume you hadn't gone to the guards at that point and you were kind of working on yourself.
Yes, exactly. I just continued to go to counselling regularly. I had, you know, successful career, successful relationship. And it wasn't until I became pregnant in, I think I was 34 years of age at the time, and pregnancy was horrendous. Flashbacks all the way through, and just found it really difficult to deal with people invading my body, you know. So after I had the baby, it was a baby girl, and I decided to set up an informal restorative meeting with the person who had abused me, and this was facilitated by a mutual person. And I thought that might help. It didn't really, because they admitted some, but not all. So I felt greatly let down.
Astounding that they even agreed to it and then turned up and tried to gaslight you.
They did, yeah. Tried to convince me I'd made up some of the more serious instances when I was older.
Yeah. So when your daughter was about 10, that seemed to have been a major tipping point for you.
Yeah, because that was the last time that I remember being abused. And we got an email from school to say that the school was going to be teaching the students about personal safety, and this would include intimate parts of their body, which obviously, as a parent, I was delighted that they were going to do that, but extremely triggering for me. And it was probably just a catalyst. Like, over the previous couple of months, I had been listening to things like the podcasts on, you know, related to this issue, and it was playing in my mind that I really should report. But then when I got the email from the school, it was a catalyst that made me pick up the phone, and that was in April 2021.
And is that how it starts? You just phone them up and does someone come and see you, or what's the process?
Yeah, so I rang the guards on a Friday, and on the Saturday morning I got a call from Garda Alan Caulfield from the Garda National Protective Services Bureau. He was absolutely brilliant, and he talked me through the steps and said I should write down detail everything from 6 years old right up to now. So I spent that whole weekend, typed up a very detailed document, and he explained to me that, look, if I go ahead with this, you know, a lot of the control is gone. You become a witness in it. It's, you know, it's not your case. It's the DPP's case. And he made it very clear that this could go on for years. So I wasn't going in blindfolded. I had a very clear understanding of how long it might possibly take. But even when they're saying 4 years, you're really thinking, oh yeah, like that's not really going to be that long. But, you know, here I am.
And when you go in to make a formal statement, that, as I understand it, that goes on for hours.
I was terrified about that, and I did find it really helpful that it's not in a Garda station. It's in a, you know, nondescript, very private space that you're brought into. And the detective, Pamela, was fantastic again. Like, I can't praise the Gardaí high enough. Like, she was so sensitive. She, you know, it was done over two sessions. Like, it was a total of 11 hours that I gave a statement for, and it was split over two separate sessions.
Yeah, that must have been really grueling to do.
Yes, and I probably, you know, should have thought about that. You know, I was very much trying to just keep my normal day-to-day going on, and I did turn up for work, but I was an absolute mess. Like, I should have taken some days off around it.
And after that point, then after you've given your statement and you give them the names of other people to interview, and this goes to the DPP. Now, I know people probably think the DPP is one person, but actually, in your case, it was someone you knew.
It was, and obviously, you know, Ireland's a small place, so conflict of interest, and it was passed on to someone else.
Yeah. And so then how there was then, I assume, a large gap before they told you we're going to go ahead and interview the abuser.
Yes, there were lots of years past where, you know, I'm a doer, so I was trying to help them as much as possible, you know, giving them contacts, address details for anyone that I thought might help with the case. So they interviewed a lot of relevant people, but yeah, they left the accuser until very near the end. And it's a complex case because that person is abroad, so it would have involved Interpol. So that obviously added to the length of time that this whole process has taken. But it seems ridiculous that it's so long.
And during that period, was it mostly up to you to contact them to see how things were going?
Yes, and like I don't want to lay blame, you know, at my detective that was working on the case for that, because, you know, they are clearly overworked with so many cases. I mean, if you think about the year that I reported, there were 3,306 sexual offences reported that year. So they are dealing with so much, and a lot more of historical cases are being brought forward as well, because I suppose more of us are talking about it.
Yeah. So then, nearly, is it 5 years down the road, and this is only back a couple of weeks ago, you get a phone call.
Yeah, so it'll be 5 years in April since I first picked up that call to the Garda confidential line. And last Monday, 2 weeks ago, I was in work, got a text from the detective asking, can I take a call? You know, it's so rare that you hear from them. Obviously, you're going to say yes, even though I was in the middle of work. And she just said, look, the DPP has decided not to go ahead.
After all those years. She's not, the detective, I assume, wasn't at liberty to tell you why.
No, because she's not given the reasons. And that's like one of the reasons that I wrote the article in the Irish Times is because I just think it's difficult enough for us. If they're asking for us to come forward and report these cases, which I did, and I've followed every step of the processes. And I just think at this point, when they're communicating to me that they're not going any further, why do I then have to go download a document called How to Request Reasons and Reviews? It's a 10-page document that I then have to fill out within 28 days. Honestly, for the about 10 days after I got that call, I was numb. I couldn't think about doing anything. So 10 days are gone already. I finally filled out, read the document on last Saturday, and I filled out the form and sent it off on Saturday. I didn't get any response. Like, you think there should be an automated response to give me some confidence that it has been received, because, you know, I have to do it within 28 days. So I'd like to receive assurances that they absolutely have received it. But I'm sitting here talking to you and I'm thinking, do I need to follow up to the Victim Crimes Unit to make sure they got the email? You know, it's ridiculous.
And are there any strictures on this, in the sense you will get a reply within a certain period of time?
Yes. So they have to respond to me within, usually happens within 28 days. If I'm not satisfied with the reasons, then I can ask for a review. Again, that will involve me writing to the victim's liaison unit to ask for the review. And they will then take another 28 days to consider my request for a review. Apparently it's a lawyer. The review will be carried out by a lawyer who was not involved in making the original decision. And the lawyer will consider all the evidence given. And then a review will usually be completed within 6 weeks of receiving my request. And there are two possible outcomes. Obviously, the first is the reviewer decides the original decision should be reversed. If this happens, the DPP will instruct the Gardaí to start court proceedings as soon as possible. And then the other outcome, obviously, is if the reviewer decides the original decision not to prosecute is correct, then there's no further right of review.
Was it all worth it, Mary?
If you asked me that when I got that call on Monday, 2 weeks ago, I probably, you know, I was so devastated that day. But look, like every time, I just have to brush myself off and realise I have to do everything I can for myself.
Yeah, yeah. And has it helped you? Because, I mean, you have been proactive. You've done everything you possibly could do. So has that helped you in yourself?
I think it does. You know, I would encourage my children to always, you know, fight for justice. And I think it's important that I don't just say that and I, you know, practice what I preach as well.
Yeah. And as you said, you know, you don't want this to define you, but there's still a burden there, I assume, you're carrying.
That's the frustrating thing. And you know, in the article that I wrote, I referenced the fact that you had Rachel Morrow on from the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, and, you know, she talks about the fact, you know, none of us deserved for this to happen to us, and yet we're the ones that have to carry the burden for the rest of our lives.
Yeah. Because I've noticed in the previous article you wrote, you've used the word guilt a few times.
Yeah, it's frustrating, and, you know, I'm going for counselling for years, and there's always going to be that guilt, I suppose, in terms of the hurt and pain that I'm causing my family by, you know, not being able to just get on with it. You know, a lot of them would prefer I just moved on. And believe me, I wish I could, but, you know, it's not that easy.
Yeah. And there's so many other people out there listening to us now, Mary, who have had a similar story, who perhaps haven't come forward. Would you encourage them to do that?
I really would, but I would absolutely encourage them to make sure that they have professional support with them every step of the way. I would absolutely have been lost if I didn't have that professional support, along with the support of my husband and close friends and, you know, family members have tried their best in some instances, but it's been very difficult for them.
Yeah. Given that you've been through the system, and obviously we don't know what the result of the review will be, what would you like to have happened that was different?
timescales and communications, and I suppose, resources for the Gardaí that they are able to communicate with you on a more, I think there probably needs to be an agreed, you know, milestone points that they, you know, that they have to at least communicate with the survivor, on specific times throughout the year. You know, I was constantly the one checking in on emails. And again, I don't see that as a fault of them. I just think they're stretched. You know, the DPP, it would be really helpful if we weren't burdened with more bureaucratic documents. I'm an intelligent woman. I have no problem reading 10 pages of documents. But when you're, you're at a very low point and you have to try and process all this. Like, I probably read that 10 page document and it's written in plain English. I've probably read it 15 times.
Yeah. Though to a degree, I mean, your story and many other similar stories erodes trust in the system in general.
It really does. And like, we want to, you know, I have trust in the Gardaí. I have trust in my counsellor. I just think the legal system needs to support us better when it's asking us to come forward.
Mary, we wish you the very best and fingers crossed for the result of that review. Mary, thanks a million.
Thank you.
And obviously a lot of comments on that, expressing their sympathy for Mary and admiring her bravery as well. The one texter says, this is heartbreaking to listen to. A friend of mine had a similar situation, was sorry she reported in the end as it didn't go anywhere and she had to revisit the trauma, which in ways she felt she'd moved on from. And especially over that extended period of time, 5 years in Mary's case that took. Somebody else wants to know, can she appeal that decision? Not in the traditional legal sense. You can't go to court and do that. It's this review that she described where you have to fill out a document. And obviously, if you've been impacted or affected in any way by any of the things we're talking about, the Rape Crisis Centre, number is 1800 778 888. 1800 778 888.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.